We're in the middle of Torah Zayin and Likutei Moran Tanina. We're up to paragraph Ches, where the paragraph begins with the words Vezek Pirush. Just to summarize for a minute or two what we've spoken about till now, Rabbi Nizal began this chapter speaking about one of the most important qualities of a Jewish leader, which is kindness, Rachmonus. And Rabbi Nizal says that this kindness manifests itself most importantly with regards to protecting the Jews from committing any sins. There's no greater pity on a Jew than the pity over a person committing a sin. Because Rabbi Nizal quotes the Gemara which says, Ein Yisurim B'lo Yavoin, that there's no suffering that ever befalls a Jew, generally, without a sin. So that if anything is to be classified as suffering, it's only because it's associated with sin. So the main concept of the kindness and pity that the tzaddikim have on Bnei Yisrael is in shining Torah into them and teaching them Torah, which pushes out the wisdom of Torah, pushes out the foolishness, the ruach shtus, which is the cause of all sins. The Gemara says in the beginning of Saita, that it's the ruach shtus that causes sin, and therefore, by teaching them Torah, that eliminates, that counters this ruach shtus, this foolish spirit, and that prevents them from having, from committing or having any sins. And Rabbi Nizal said that this concept of teaching Torah relates to two sections. One is to one's children, to one's son, and one is to one's student. And Rabbi Nizal said in certain ways a son is a student, and in some ways a student is a son. Rabbi Nizal quoted statements in the Gemara which show this, that a person who teaches Torah to a student, that student is classified as though the rabbi created him, so that in a sense he's considered a child of the Rebbe. On the other hand, if a person teaches Torah to his child, that child in some ways takes on the properties of a student. And in certain ways, if there's a choice of which to call his father, by the term father or rabbi, or we have this question brought in Shulchan Aruch about a father-in-law, if a person's father-in-law is his rabbi, what title is he supposed to refer to him by, as his father-in-law or as his rabbi? There's no question at all that the title of rabbi is one of greater respect. So we see that there does exist a concept of a son being a student and a student being a son. And Rabbi Nizal spoke a lot about this and about how each and every person speaking to any friend about Hashem, about wisdom about Hashem, or fear of Hashem, automatically anything that he transmit to that friend classifies him as a concept of a Rebbe to that friend. And anything that his friend transmits back to him, that classifies his friend as being his rabbi in that sense. And Rabbi Nizal said that the reward that Hashem gives to people who practice this, who teach Torah to each other, Rabbi Nizal says the reward that Hashem gives is that if a person shows a willingness to empty out his head to other people, to give to other people wisdom of Torah, the gift of Hashem is that Hashem fills the void, Hashem fills the vacuum, and Hashem allows that person to understand things that he never understood before, which we refer to by the term makifin. Makif means like a halo, that which is outside the brain, it encircles the brain, it's not inside the brain. It's the knowledge and wisdom which a person has not yet achieved, which Hashem gives a person the potential, the capacity to achieve that knowledge when the person practices this mitzvah of teaching Torah to another Jew. This is the reward that's given by Hashem. And Rabbi Nizal said that in understanding, in a rabbi teaching students, there are two types of students. There are students that are very, very knowledgeable, and there are students that are far from knowledge. To those students that are very knowledgeable, where there is a fear of them getting the thought into their head that they're too smart, that they know too much, they know it all already, to them the attitude of the Rebbe has to be to push them down, in a sense, to push them away, to show them that if you ever get this thought into your head that you're already very, very close to me or very close to Hashem already, you should know that you're very far, you haven't even yet begun. And the Rebbe has to present Hashem to them in such a way where they feel very far from him. Otherwise, if he presents Hashem to them as being very close to them, the fact that they're so knowledgeable and so religious, this could lead to gaiva, to haughtiness, to arrogance, or to a feeling of total accomplishment where they're not going to have any drive, any thirst for religion. Whereas those students that are very far from Hashem, and they've committed many sins, and as a result, many times they could get a feeling into their heads that there's no hope for them anymore, that they're so far away that even if they would want to work their whole life to get close, there's no way they could do it. To them, the Rebbe has to bring Hashem very close to them, and he has to bring himself very close to them. He has to show them that although you think you're very far, the greatness of Hashem is such that there doesn't exist a potential of being very far. There's no way in the world for you to distance yourself from Hashem if Hashem is everything and Hashem is everywhere. So if you try to move away from Hashem, there's no way you can do it. And by the Rebbe teaching them in this manner, he strengthens them up to the point where they have enough self-confidence to start learning on their own and davening on their own and becoming religious on their own so that they're able to function in a religious manner. Rabbi Elazar refers to these two different levels as Dore Malo and Dore Mato, the upper level and the lower level, those who are on a higher level versus those who are on a lower level in terms of religion. Rabbi Elazar said also, there is a concept of a rabbi holding back information at times, certain knowledge, certain high-level knowledge, holding it back from students for a specific purpose. Because we mentioned earlier that when a person teaches Torah to other people, part of the reward that Hashem gives the person for teaching Torah is that Hashem gives him additional knowledge. Now there are certain, now knowledge is a two-step procedure. As far as a person attaining any aspect of knowledge, it involves two steps. Step one is the person has to become aware that there is a question, that there is something that the person does not understand. Step two is to get to understand that item, to get to understand the solution. Now, for example, if you have a student who registers himself in a yeshiva and he feels that he has all the knowledge that this yeshiva has to offer to him, he knows it all already. There's nothing new that they have to offer. He doesn't feel that he has any question that he wants to ask here. Then that alone will cut him off from being able to draw any new or additional knowledge. The whole means, the medium of being able to acquire new knowledge is, first you come up with a question, something you don't understand, that's one level, and once you come up with that, you present your question, then if there is a solution to your question, you have that, you've risen a whole cycle within knowledge. Now, Rabbi Elazar says many times, depending on what stage a person is up to, if a person is up to the stage that he just received a piece of knowledge, then the next item Hashem would offer him, if he was teaching people Torah, Hashem would offer him a new question. Now, certain questions are so deep and so high level that it's dangerous even for a big tzaddik to have such a question. Therefore, at times, a tzaddik has to refrain from giving out certain pieces of information because the result of him giving out that information could be that Hashem will give him a new piece of knowledge in the form of one of these questions that's too difficult to understand that could impose a threat on the tzaddik's faith or on the tzaddik's whole level of religion. And Rabbi Elazar, the last item that we covered last week was where Rabbi Elazar quoted an example from Masechta Menachos, the story of Moshe Rabbeinu going up to heaven, watching Hashem making crowns for the letters. And Rabbi Elazar explained that whole episode in the Gemara based on what we had learned up until this point. This is pretty much where we're up to now, and we're going to continue from where we left off last week. Rabbi Elazar says now that everything we've mentioned up until this point conforms with and corresponds beautifully with the interpretation that we're going to give to a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. One of the statements, one of the first Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah says three rules. Rule number one, have a mesunim badin. First, we're going to translate these things according to their simple interpretation, and then we're going to show how Rabbi Elazar interprets them related to what we're learning now. Number one, have a mesunim badin, that a judge, a Jewish judge, is required to be slow in his judgment. The term musun means slow. And the Gemara says this refers to many items. Number one, a Jewish judge, if he's asked a question, even if he thinks the question is a simple question, he's never permitted to answer quickly. He's always advised to think the question through once or twice additionally, and possibly look up the question, as simple as it may seem, because of the fact it could be, there could be an aspect of this question that didn't occur to him, that if he gives it a minute or two of additional thought, that aspect will occur to him, and he'll clarify, he'll delve deeper into it, and the person he'll come up, he'll uncover some bit of information that was related to this question that he wouldn't have uncovered if he just took it on the surface and answered quickly, spontaneously. That's number one. That's one example of this. Or in general, to any Jew, to be slow in passing judgment on any other Jew. When it comes to issuing a judgment, whether it be an issuance of a guilty verdict or an innocent verdict, when it comes to a Jew, a person should be slow in passing judgment. Again, because of the tremendous risk in making a mistake. That's number one. Number two is Veheemidu Talmidim Harbe, that the rabbis of the Jews are advised by Hashem to try to have many, many students. Don't settle for a small number of students. Try to have very many. And the reason that most of the commentaries give for this is very simple. Because of the fact that when a rabbi teaches students, generally, he does not bat 1,000, meaning that all the students that he starts out teaching don't necessarily finish, don't necessarily get to the finish line, either in terms of being a success in terms of religion, or in terms of knowledge, or in terms of sticking to him specifically. In many cases, the rabbi will achieve advancing his students to a tremendous level where they can take off on their own, but yet it's understood that if they stick to him even after that point, there's still additional things that they can learn from him for 120 years, no question, because generally, that's always the case between a rabbi and student, that no matter how much the student is advancing, the student has to be aware that if the rabbi is any type of real rabbi, he's not sitting still either. Every single day he's increasing his knowledge and his holiness in leaps and bounds, so that automatically he's keeping himself way ahead of his students, so that the student who sticks to him throughout his entire life, he's going to have enough to fill himself with in this world and in the next world, this kind of concept. So because of that, the Gemara says the fact is, though, that very, very few students are zeche to understand this, to appreciate this, and to carry this out. Therefore, the advice that's given is, he'emidu talmidim harbe, try to have as many students as you can with the hope that if you'll have many, maybe you'll be left with a few that'll be a complete success. Or at least, and even those that aren't, you'll have accomplished the maximum that you possibly can. That's rule number two. Rule number three is, va'asu siok la'Torah. Put a fence around the Torah. Those rabbis who are teaching Torah to Bnei Israel are always required, when they teach Torah, to present it in such a way to their students where they don't teach the student exactly up until the line of what he's permitted to do, and they allow him to do it up until that point, because if you allow him to get that close to committing an error, then if the student makes the tiniest miscalculation on his own part, chas v'shalom, the person could end up committing a sin because you didn't give him a margin for error. Therefore, the Gemara says, "Va'asu siok la'Torah," that one of the missions of the rabbis of the Jewish people is to put a fence around the Torah itself, to allow for that margin of error on all sides, so that by the rabbis putting a fence around the Torah, at worst, if a person does make a slight miscalculation in following what his rabbi said, still it will never endanger an actual law of the Torah, because the rabbi has made sure to add on to the requirement to the Torah a little bit, so that in doing that, there's no way in the world that the person could ever jeopardize an actual mitzvah of the Torah, unless he really, really makes a major transgression against something his rabbi taught him. So these are three rules that are presented in one of the Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos. Now Rabbi Elazar is going to interpret them, conforming to what we just learned, and show the association why these three are mentioned in the same Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar says, "Havi misudim badin zebchina shetzorich hachochem anal lihiyos loy mesinus leida eich ledaberim kolechot viechot." Rabbi Elazar says, a chacham, an intelligent person, a Rebbe, has to be slow in what? He has to be slow in being able to calculate, in being able to evaluate each and every one of his students, to be able to figure out, is this student from the Dorei Mala or from the Dorei Mata? Is he on a level where the manner in which I conduct myself with him, the manner in which I speak with him, has to be pushing away a little bit, has to be showing him that Hashem is very far from him, because he has achieved such a level where if I try to show him closeness, he's going to be convinced that there's nothing more to do? Or is this student a student who's really far, who's really very down now, and who needs picking up? Where if I push him away in this manner, chas v'shalom, there's a risk that who knows what could happen. He could go lost completely. So this is what the term mesinus means. A person has to be slow. Before he attempts to deal with any of his students, he has to make an evaluation, a general evaluation of that student that applies to that student on a general manner, and also an evaluation for that minute. Because we know that each and every student experiences aliyas and yiridas, ups and downs. And a Rebbe has to be sensitive to this. He has to watch this, study this, and be able to judge exactly what that student needs at a certain time. Now, there are times when a student is pushed away, let's say, and the student feels that what he needed at that point was bringing close. This is where there is an element of trust involved. A student has to try to pick a Rebbe whom he feels confident, number one, that the Rebbe is capable of making such an evaluation, capable of being able to detect at what stage that person is. Is he close? Is he far? Is he an aliyah, an irida? Number one, capable of making the identification. And number two, knowing exactly how to counter. That depending on what mode the student is in, sometimes the person could feel that he needs a sweet word, and really giving him a sweet word at that time would hurt him. It's only saying something bitter. And sometimes a Rebbe will say something nice to a student, and the student feels, boy, I wish the Rebbe would reprimand me. I know the Torah says, Es asher yehav Hashem yechiyah. So if he's saying something nice to me, possibly what he means to be doing is pushing away. And again, here the element of trust is required. A person has to seek out a Rebbe who has this knowledge, who knows this chapter in the Qumran, who understands how to deal with this, and knows thereby how to counter each and every aspect that exists among the Talmidim. So Rabbi Elazar says, שצריך החוכמה מראה לי אסלוי מסינוס לידייך לדבר עם כל אחד ויחוד שלפני בחינס דורי מעלו before the דורי מעלו, those who are on a high level, יגל אלוהם ההסוגו של מו. The Rebbe has to show them the concept of מו. What? In other words, this concept of a distance from Hashem. What? Where is Hashem? In other words, as if to imply that we haven't yet begun to come close to Hashem. בחינס מחונס מרפישפש, as the Zohar HaKadosh uses that wording, that a person seeking Hashem in religion, he feels many times that he's groping in the dark. He has no idea where is Hashem, how could he possibly begin to come close to Hashem. Philifnei Dori Mato, and before students who are at a lower level, Yigala Hahasogo Shalmaloi Choloretz Kavoidoi, the Rebbe has to present to them the concept of Hashem filling the entire world, so that if they ever get a thought into their mind that they're far from Hashem, he has to be able to convince them that that's ridiculous, and there's no way in the world for them to ever get far from Hashem. Now the question is, why doesn't the Mishnah use the term teaching? Why does it use the term judgment? Having mesunim badin, be slow in passing judgment. Rabbi Nizal says you should know that that word has been picked very, very carefully, very properly. Why? Rabbi Nizal says kelikim shayfed zayashpil v'zayorim. There's a pasuk that says about Hashem that Hashem judges, and in his judgment he lifts one up and he pushes one down. So we see that the act of judgment involves elevating the innocent and pushing down the guilty. In other words, pushing down, forcing the guilty one to pay up in a case. For example, if there was a litigation, if there was a question of money where there's a debate, this one says you owe me $100, this one says I don't owe you $100, and we find out that it's true that he does owe the $100, by subtracting from this one and adding to this one, this is how we rectify the situation. So this one was 100 negative when we started, this one was 100 positive. We take the 100 away from him, we bring him down, we give 100 to him, we lift him up, and now we've balanced the scales. Everything comes out exactly where it should be. So Rabbi Nizal says this concept of lowering and raising is a concept of judgment. Shehagvoyim hu tzorich lahashpil. Those who are high, the Rebbe has to lower them. Laharos lehem she'enam yodim klal b'yedios yisborach. The Rebbe has to show them that they know nothing about Hashem. They have not yet begun to know anything about Hashem. V'haktanim, and those that are small, those that are low, b'chinas sheikh ne'ofor, who are compared to those who are living in the dust. In other words, they're in the dirt, they're in the grime. That's how low they are. The Rebbe has to lift them up and wake them up and arouse them so that they should not chas v'shalom give up hope. He has to convince them that the kavod of Hashem, the glory of Hashem, fills the entire world. V'zeh, Rabbi Nizal says, so this is what the first sentence of the Mishnah means when it says, having mesunim badin, be slow in judgment. It means be slow in doing this analysis of up and down and being able to pass judgment, meaning being able to figure out how to lower one student and how to raise the other student. How to lower the one that needs lowering and how to raise the one that needs raising. The second statement is V'hamidu talmidim harbe ki kishe zeicha lahasogo kazu, because when a Rebbe is zeicha to this level of intellect, when a Rebbe truly understands what we just said, l'ho'ir b'gdoyle muktanim, to know that he's responsible to be able to alter his methodology in dealing with each and every student, and to be able to figure out which one is high, which one is low, be able to deal with each one differently. Kanal, as we said earlier, Bavadai Yamid Talmidim Harbe. A Rebbe like this will certainly be zeicha to be able to have many students. Why? Because he's not limiting himself in any way. He's not saying that his school is set up in such a way that he can only deal with Bali Tshuva, people who are very, very far from Hashem. His shiurim, his lectures are designed in such a way that it's only for such people. Or another Rebbe gives a shiur in such a manner that his shiur is designed only for people who are very learned in Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and this and that, they'll be able to benefit, whereas one who's far from religion can't. One who learns what we had just said here knows, understands, that he has to be able to present his teachings in such a way where two people could be attending his shir, one could be very, very knowledgeable in deep wisdom of Torah, one could be very far from Hashem, and both could be benefiting equally from the type of shir that's being presented, to be able to present it in such a way where each one is getting exactly what he's supposed to. Rabbi Nizal says, Ki kulam tzrichem ela, because such a rabbi, all students need him. The big ones need him and the small ones need him. He's catering to each type. Because he has the capacity to be able to study with all of them, as we said earlier. V'zehu, and this is why the Mishnah continues to say, Kitzorich lasay siog lidvarov lishtoik lefamim. For such a Rebbe, the Mishnah advises to know that there are times when he has to put a fence around his work. Excuse me. I'm sorry. V'zehu va'asu siyog la'Torah. This is why the Mishnah says, make a fence around the Torah. V'chinas, this corresponds to another statement of the Gemara, siyog la'chochmo shtika. The Gemara says, what's the best fence around wisdom? A person who has wisdom and he wants to protect his wisdom, that it should remain intact, one of the best advices to him is shtika, to be quiet, meaning not to talk a lot. People who talk a lot are looked at as being foolish. So that which identifies an intellectual is the less speech. He talks less, and when he chooses his words, he's very selective in when he speaks and what he says, and in that manner, he's able to talk intelligently. Rabbi Elazar says, Ki tzorich lasos siyog ledvarav. So note, when it says va'asu siyog la'Torah, make a fence around the Torah, what is this fence? There's another Mishnah that says siyog la'chochma shtika, that the fence is silence. So make a silence to your Torah at times, the Gemara is saying to this Rabbi. Ki tzorich lasos siyog ledvarav lishtoik lefomim. He has to be quiet at times. Bechinas shtoik kachonu b'machshava karal. As the Mishnah said, as Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, when he asked a certain question, Hashem said to him, be quiet. Kach olam b'machshava. This is how a person rises up in machshava, in this level of machshava. Rabbi Nizal says, Ki al yidei shezeche lahamid talmidim harbe, through a Rebbe being zeche to establish many talmidim, al yidei zehu zeche lahasig es hamakifin. What Hashem will automatically grant him as a gift is that he'll get to understand many secrets, many makifin, things which he didn't understand up until that point. Dahainu shemasig umevin mashalai hoya yocha lahasig mitchila. He gets to understand and achieve that which he couldn't understand originally. Therefore, he's advised to make a fence around his words and be quiet at times, to refrain from answering certain questions that his students have. Why? So that the rabbi should not enter into the level of knowledge which is above the concept of time, a certain very deep level of knowledge which is not attainable in this world without getting hurt, where it's possible for the Rebbe in achieving so high level of wisdom, chas v'shalom, that it could be damaging in a sense. So Rabbi Nizal says, She'ein hazman masbik levayer hakushes vatirutzim she'eshom kanal, whereby there exists this level of knowledge where the time does not contain within it, time is too limited to be able to allow for the person being able to understand fully the questions that exist in that realm. Therefore, the advice that's given to the Rebbe is to be able to make, again, a judgment as to what to say, what not to say, when to hold back, so as to keep himself in check, in line, so that he himself should not climb to a level, should not begin delving into certain questions which could be damaging to him.
In this process that the Rebbe judges the Talmud at a specific time to see what he needs, say with the Tzaddik, is that process go on all the time in every single one of his relationships, in every single contact that he has with a particular Talmidim?
Most definitely. And for starters, that's something that's included in Tefillah. In other words, when a person who's in any position of responsibility, whether it be a parent to his children, whether it be a Rebbe to his students, here again, a parent relating to children, there are times when the attitude that needs to be shown is bringing close. And if you push a child away at that time, you could cause permanent damage, chas v'shalom, real fatal damage, rachmona letzlan. They're okay. Again, we have newspapers, we have history books to verify that there was such cases where a person needed bringing close, he was pushed away, rachmona letzlan, it caused catastrophe. On the other hand, there are times when a child needs to be pushed away in order to maintain a certain level of distance from the parent, not to get too chummy with the parent, because that could cause a loss of respect, a loss of discipline that has to be maintained in a parent-child relationship. So here again, if a parent, chas v'shalom, does the wrong thing at the wrong time, could be tremendously damaging. So any person who's in this position of being a parent is responsible in davening to Hashem. This is part of what you have to ask for. Hashem, guide me, give me the seichel to be able to know when to be mekarev, when to be merachek. had a Rebbe with his students, it's understood that every time Rabbi Nazal said that a person should never allow himself to get up to teach Torah without first davening to Hashem, asking Hashem to put the right things into his words. And this is part of what we mean by putting the right things into his words. In other words, not only does this apply to a Rebbe's independent relationship where when he's with one individual, he has to know whether to turn on the warmth or the ice, but this could apply even in a classroom situation. A person could be teaching 30 students, and Hashem can give such a gift into his words that each student in that room is going to be able to receive exactly what he's supposed to. The one that has to get smacked is going to feel a smack in his words. The one that has to be warmed and brought close is going to feel a bringing close. This potential exists. We're going to learn about it. We're learning about it now. The power of a tzaddik, that a tzaddik has this knowledge and has this potential. How does he get it? Part of it is intellect, knowing how to talk intelligently. Part of it is a gift from Hashem. He actually asks Hashem to shine this holiness, this kiddush into his words, that they should be able to work in such a way.
So is this process supposed to transcend, let's say, the parent, for example, is supposed to, this thought of what is the right thing to do at this particular time is supposed to transcend any particular mood that the parent happens to be in at the time. In other words, if he happens to be in a certain mood and he sees that the child needs a certain type of thing, he has to give it to him.
100%.
No matter what.
And that's where the objectiveness comes in. That's where if a parent hears the warning that's given in Shulchan Aruch and in all the places wherever it talks about disciplining children, the warning is that a parent is never, ever, ever, ever permitted to discipline a child out of anger. If a parent is ever angered by something the kid did, he has to keep quiet until the anger subsides. After the anger has subsided and left completely, then he's in a position to do something. Because again, here's where everybody misses the point. When a parent's hitting a kid takes a glass and drops it on the floor and splatters glass all over the floor, and the parent has to now go clean it up. What is the parent hitting the kid for? Are you hitting him because he made you have to clean it up? If you're doing that, you have a very small brain. A parent that acts in such a way is very selfish, very small-minded, because the result is the kid is going to see that and understand that, and you're not going to be teaching him any lesson for the future. It's not going to make him be any more careful in the future. You brought across a point that because you happened to have a rough day, he happened to do anything, whether it was something that warranted 50 pech or 10 pech, depending on what mood you were in, that's what determined whether he got a kiss for it or he got his head handed to him for it. Versus, if a person understands that the purpose in teaching a student or the purpose in disciplining a child is only for the future, it's not for the past, you don't punish for the past, it's only for the future, then a person conducts himself completely differently. Then there's no cause for what you just did. I'm hitting you in such a way that this is going to serve as a reminder, this is going to leave a lasting impression, you're going to associate doing this with pain, you're going to know not to do it. Here again with a student, if a student does something that angers a Rebbe, and the Rebbe lashes out because the student did something to antagonize the Rebbe, such a Rebbe has a chesaron in himself, because if he set himself up in such a way that a student could prick him, could needle him, could antagonize him and bring out a smash, bring out something reprimanding, that's not a Rebbe to a student anymore. That's two friends fighting. If it's Rebbe to student, he's not going to reprimand him. He's not going to hit him for what he did. He's going to reprimand him to teach him what he should or shouldn't do in the future. He's going to be makariv or marachik him depending on what he has to know for the future, not for the past.
We say that maintaining a good Rebbe-student relationship is so hard, so difficult, and so many fall away. Why should the attitude or the approach be have a lot of talmidim in which you might not be able to devote so much attention to each one, and hopefully some will fall into the right path, as opposed to saying, well, just try, very hard with just a few, and you might have more success, putting more effort into a few.
Okay, the answer is that Rabbi Nizal says in Sichei Saran, Rabbi Nizal says about a parent to children that the warning is not to get too close. And if that warning is given between parent and children, there's no question at all that it's true much more so not equally, but more so, between a Rebbe and students. So it's not a question that if he's going to limit himself, have less students, he's going to be able to devote more time and attention to each student, and they're going to benefit more. In a way, that could hurt them more. Sometimes, or many times, in fact, the distance, if the student has any iota of seichel, the distance isn't going to push him away. It's going to make him, it's going to force him to work harder. Because here he learned 10 pages of Gemara and he thought this would bring him close. And he thought it would bring him this close, and all he feels is he's advanced an inch. He's going to push more, drive more, more davening, more learning, more mitzvahs, because he still feels tremendous distance, more effort. The concept that Rabbi Elazar says, hisrachkus hi tachlis ahiskarvus. Now note, there is a concept of a class too big. Just as in school, there is a concept of having, 30 kids in a class, 60 kids in a class, where it gets too big to be able to handle in any concept of decorum. That concept could exist. Here again, according to the level of tzaddik that a person is, the tzaddik emes is the one who can take on the whole world at the same time, literally. He's unlimited in capacity. He's able to speak in such a way that if you had representatives of every faction conceivable under the sun, every idea, they could all relate to him. He could speak in such a way where he relates to each and every one of them and gives each and every one of them exactly what they need. According to how much lower, how far away we are from that level, that's what determines a person's capacity for being able to relate to how many people he can relate to. That's what it is.
This last thing was mentioned about the Zman. Could you explain that a little more?
We're going to have more on that soon. But in other words, this is obviously a little bit deep. Rabbi Elazar's touching on something deep, but we'll try to explain it in simple form. This world, the world that we're in, is constricted, confined by certain parameters. Number one, space. Number two, time. Basically, those are two physical constrictions that exist in this world, which we're told do not exist in the next world, do not exist within the realm of super holiness. When we get to a level of super, super Kedusha, the concept of time is nullified, the concept of space is nullified. Examples of that are, number one, the holiest place on this earth. The holiest country is Israel, the holiest city is Yerushalayim, the holiest building is the Beis HaMikdash, the holiest room is the Holy of Holies, and the Chumash tells us very clearly that one of the manifestations of the spectacular holiness there was that it was the Arayin, which was the holiest part, the Ark, existed in zero space. Literally, the dimensions of that room were 20 amos, which means 40 feet. There were the two kruvim, the two cherubs, which took up exactly 20 feet each, and in between them was the Arayin. That means the Arayin existed in zero space. How could that be? Our physical minds cannot understand that. The Torah tells us that such a thing is possible in terms of Kedusha. When it comes to time, we gave examples. When Moshe Rabbeinu was battling against Amalek, he elevated himself to such a super high level of Kedusha where he took control of time. He stopped time. He made the sun stop. He extended the day to be able to continue the battle, to be able to finish the battle up until whatever point they wanted to. Yahushua did the same thing. He made time stop, which means he climbed to such a high level of Kedusha, such a high level of holiness, he went above the concept of time. Now, in terms of names of Hashem, you see how, again, everything ties in to this basic knowledge of Kabbalah, which is very, very helpful. Within Hashem's name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, we spoke many times, we've mentioned this many times, there are four basic combinations of how the name of Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, can be written out in full when it's filled out. The letters, if we spell the letters as follows, we spell the letter Yud, Yud-Vav-Dalet, we spell the letter He, He Yud. We spell the letter Vav, Vav, Aleph, Vav. We spell the second He, He Yud, He as He Yud. That Nilui, that filling out of Hashem's name, is Begimatria. The letters have a numerical value of 72. If we spell it slightly differently, where the He's are spelled with Yuds, But the Vav is spelled Vav Aleph. The first case, the Vav was spelled Vav Yud Vav. Did I say that? I made a mistake. In the first case, for the numerical value of 72, it has to be Yud Vav Dalet, He Yud, Vav Yud Vav, and then He Yud. That equals to 72. There is another gematria that the Arizal brings, where the Vav is spelled Vav Aleph Vav, and it goes down, we take away 9 actually, 72 take away 9 gives us 63. Now, why these specific spellings are picked, this is all the wisdom of the Zohar HaKadosh, the Arizal, which explain this. This is not our subject for now, so we're not going to get into it. For now, we're simply going to accept the fact that this is the case, because it's written as follows, that there are these four combinations, and they're called Ov, Sog, Mo, and Bon. Ov is Ayin Beis, 72, Sog is Samach Gimel, 63, Mo is 45, Mem Hei, where it's spelled Yud Vav Dalet, Hei Aleph, Vav Aleph Vav, and Hei Aleph, that has a gematria of 45, and Bon, the gematria 52, is where the letters are spelled slightly differently, where the yud is spelled yud vav dalet, the hey is spelled hey hey, the vav is spelled vav aleph vav, and the second hey is spelled again hey hey, I believe. Let's see, 20, 30, 40, 40, and the vav is spelled vav vav, without an aleph in it inside whatsoever. Vav being spelled vav vav, that has a numerical value of 52. So there are these four combinations which correspond to the four letters. The combination of corresponds to the letter Yud of Yud Kei Vav Kei. The combination of Sog corresponds to the first He, Mo to the Vav, and Bon to the second He. Now we said many times that there are 10 attributes of Hashem. 10 basic attributes of Hashem, which correspond to the different parts of a human body. The human brain has in it 3 basic divisions, the cerebrum, the cerebellum, and the medulla. Correspondingly, in Kiddusha, in holiness, Lahavdil, we have Chochma, Bina, and Das. The rest of the body consists of basically 2 arms, the trunk of the body, 2 legs, the bris, and the lower part of the legs. Those correspond to the 7 lower midos of Hashem, which are Chesed is the right hand, Gevurah is the left hand, Tiferes is the trunk of the body, Netzach is the right foot, Hoid is the left foot, Yesoid is the bris kodesh, Malchus is the bottom of the feet, the part on which the shoes is worn, the lower part of the feet. Now, these 10 attributes of Hashem correspond to these 4 letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei, which correspond to these 4 combinations that we spoke about. So that the Yud, the letter Yud in Hebrew, consists of 2 parts. It's the letter Yud, plus there's a Kaitzai Shel Yud. In the Torah, there's a special additional piece in a Yud, besides the actual form of the letter, that's called a Kaitzai Shel Yud. The Kaitzai Shel Yud corresponds to Keser, the crown, or Chachma, depending on how we look at the spheres. Either Chachma Bina Das or Keser Chachma Bina. The Yud is Chachma, and the first He is Bina. The next Vav, Vav is 6, Vav refers to the 6 next attributes of Hashem, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Netzach, and Hoid, and the last He corresponds to Malchus. Now these last 2, now we refer to Yud Kei and Vav Kei again as 2 different levels. The parts that relate to this world which has where there's 7 days to a week, 7 years to a Shemitah, everything in this world is basically guided by the number 7, so too in this world corresponds to the 7 lower attributes of Hashem, Chesed through Malchus. Or within the 4 combinations of Ov, Sog, Mo, and Bon, it corresponds to the last 2 combinations, Mo and Bon. Whereas the next world, Olam Haba, where we're going to achieve a much higher level of holiness, that corresponds to the first 2 letters of Hashem's name, the Yud and Kei, the Ov and Sog, the much higher level combinations. The Arizal brings that, therefore, you'll note interestingly, this the Hebrew word for time is Zman. Zman means time. Where does that word come from? The answer is Zman is Bigimatria Mo plus bun. These two combinations of Hashem's name Yud Kei Vav Kei, which correspond to these seven lower attributes, which correspond to everything in this world, Olam Hazeh, this lower level, these are related. They draw their whole chiyus from these two lower level combinations of Hashem's name. Therefore, we understand that Zman represents a concept of this world, a concept of constriction, a concept of limited, versus the next world, Olam Haba, which is more unlimited, infinite, a much higher level of wisdom, above the concept of time. This is what we're referring to here pretty much, that there exists a certain level of knowledge which is above the concept of time, meaning it's a knowledge that's not achievable, or should not be achievable in this world. It's not attainable, it cannot be fully understood and appreciated in this world, because in this world we're limited. We have these blinders on us, we have the body on us that holds us down from being able to expand completely and being able to achieve understanding of everything, all knowledge that there is to understand. Whereas when a person is Zeicha to get to the next world, that's where a whole new panorama of knowledge opens up, because the body is left behind, and there's much more room for drawing from this Ov Sog, which is a much, much higher level of wisdom. Now, this is part of the secret of the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah, that we eat on Pesach, on the Seder nights of Pesach, which are considered so, so holy. What's so special about this matzah? It's called Maichla de Mehemenusa, and Asvosa, it's a cure, and it's Emunah, it's faith. The word matzah, the Arizal brings, is Bigimatria of and Sog. These two higher levels combinations. This is why the Gemara says that the matzah that the Jews ate when they came out of Mitzrayim, that matzah is called the Meichel of Malachim, the food of angels. Matzah is called, the mon is called the food of angels, and the matzah was Toamu Bo Tamon, they tasted the food of angels. Why? Because angels are not within this Olam HaAsiyah, they're not within Zman, they're above Zman, they draw from this of Sog, this much, much higher level Chiyus, this level of above Zman.
No one said that the angels are in the world.
But the answer is everything is relative. In the way we're speaking right now, this is something that you learn in learning these types of Sforim. You're going to find this coming up many, many times, that at times we refer to this world versus the next, versus that which is outside of this world, as Zman and Lamala Min Azman. So that although in reality there does exist the world of Malachim, in a sense is contained within the concept of Zman, because it is within this Mabon, but the fact is that they are closer to the level of Lamala Min Azman than we are in this world, you understand? So therefore we can refer to them as Bechinas Lamala Min Azman in relation to us. Everything is relative. Whenever you're talking in terms of Kabbalah, you should know this as a rule. In the Likutei Moran, you're going to see this come up many times, because otherwise you're going to find a contradiction. In one place, Rabbi Elazar says that this is kindness. In another place, the same item he describes as harshness. The answer is, it's relative. It depends in relation to what you're talking about.
Didn't we just have like an Enyaka Shiram that I can some the Neshama will come back together with the good.
Right.
That's like the ultimate, Ben Aiden type thing. Because saying you're going ahead and constricting, yourself again to the good.
The answer is, because at that point in time, the goof is not going to be a constriction anymore. The goof is going to rise to match the level of the neshama. That's what it's going to be. The guf is going to rise to the occasion. Whereas in this world, the neshama is being pulled down by the guf. In the next world, the neshama is going to pull the guf up to its level. That's the real truth. That's what it is. And this is the concept of Shabbos. This is the whole mitzvah. Why is there any mitzvah of Gashmias? If Shabbos is such a holy day, Shabbos should be a fast day. In other words, no eating at all. No eating, no enjoyment, no laughing, no singing. Why do we do so many Gashmiastic pleasures? Singing, sleeping, Shein and B'Shein, why? The answer is the Mefarshim bring that these two are functioning together, the Guf and the Neshama. At times, in order for the neshama to be activated, by first activating, causing a tingling in the guf, it's going to affect a tingling in the neshama. And one of the examples is the Shabbos. That the achila, the eating of sweet things on Shabbos, and the dancing and the happiness, is intended to activate. By doing this to the body, we're going to set off a charge in the neshama. It's going to allow the neshama to expand and to receive from this Torah of Atik, you know, the much, much higher level of Torah that could be gotten on Shabbos. Now Rabbi Elazar says, Ve'elu hashneim, and by the way, what you asked now about the guf and the neshama, that's going to be our next topic now. That Rabbi Elazar says you have dore mala, dore mata. What's the real trick? The real trick is to bring them together. The real trick is not to have these two operating completely separately, a higher level and a lower level, a neshama and a guf, each one going their own way. The real trick is to bring them together and lock them up together and have them both function together, as we're going to explain in this paragraph and in paragraph tests. Rabbi Elazar says, Ve'elu hashnei b'chilei shel dori mala v'dori mata, these two levels, called the upper level and the lower level, dehainu hasoga shel bechinas mo, the hasoga note. We said, but we used the term mo a minute ago as a lower level. Here, the term mo is being used as aye. You understand, as synonymous to aye. Show you again that it's relative. The fact that we're using the term mo here to mean what, in other words, the super high level of kedusha, the keser, the crown, doesn't necessarily contradict the fact that in a different context we relate to the name Mo of Hashem as being something within the seven lower spheres. Rabbi Elazar says now, Ve'elu hashnei b'chinei shel dorei mala v'dorei mata, dehainu hasoga shel b'chinas mo v'hasoga shel b'chinas mo l'yechol aretz kavoidoi, these two levels of understanding, heim b'chinas hasoga shel b'chinas ben v'hasoga shel b'chinas talmid. These two levels of understanding that we just described, a higher level and a lower level, can also be referred to as the level of understanding of a son versus the level of understanding of a student. Ki afal pi sheben v'talmid kulei chad kanal. Although we said in last week's shiur and 2 weeks ago, whenever we spoke last, we tried to show how a son and a student are actually one, how a son is really a student and a student is really a son. Ki aben hu gam kein talmid kanal, because a son should also be a student. Any parent who fathers a child and doesn't teach him anything good, doesn't have that child as his student also, he's not really considered a parent. He's not really considered a father. On the other hand, any rabbi who has a student and doesn't bring him close, doesn't show a parental feeling towards him, the same type that a father would give to a son, here again, he's being negligent in the being a rebbe, in the act of being a rebbe. Rabbi Elazar says, Ki aben hu gam kein talmid kanal, v'hatalmid hu gam kein mechinas ben, as we explained earlier, that the son is a student and the student is a son. Ki nechshav kilu asoy kanal, because when a person teaches somebody else Torah, it's considered as though he fathered him, as though he created him. Afal pikein, still, note, a minute ago we described these as two different relationships completely, as being one and the same in a sense. Afal pikein, still, yesh hefresh bein bein letalmid. There is a difference between a son and a student. We're going to show you now an actual difference in level of understanding. Why? Ki habein shehu talmid hu b'malo yisero mi talmid levad. A son who is also a student has an advantage over a student who is just a student. He is not a son of the rabbi. Why? Ki habein hu kuloi dimshach min ho'ov meiroishoi v'yad ragloi. A son comes completely from the father, from head to toe, from his hair, from the hair on his head till the toe, every single part of him. Ve'ein moy shum sayro she'eino nimsheches mimoyach ho'ov. There doesn't exist one hair in his body that did not come from the brain of his father, meaning, when is a child conceived? At the time that the parents are having relations. The droplet that's considered to be conception, where does that originate from? from the brain of the father, so that a son that's born to a set of parents, how did that son originate? That son who has 613 organs to his body and all his attributes and characteristics and idiosyncrasies, where does all of it originate from? From this droplet which originated from the brain of the father. Rabbein Azal says, Al kein, therefore, bechinas ha'asoga shel habein gedoylo yoyser b'malo be'asoga shel bechinas talmid. Therefore, Rabbein Azal says, you should know that the son has an advantage over the student. The son has a potential to advance further than the student because of the fact that the son is such where every single part of him, every single iota of him, stems from the brain of the father. Whereas, by a student, it's very difficult, very impossible, in a sense, for him to be able to nullify himself to such an extent that he should become purely the father, the rabbi. He should become nothing of his own except what he has for the rabbi. It's much more difficult. Whereas by a son, it comes much more natural because of the fact that he actually is a piece of the father. V'zehu b'chinas ha'chilik shebein nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu l'shar ha'neviim. Rabbeinu Zal says, this is the distinction between Moshe Rabbeinu versus the other prophets. We find that Moshe Rabbeinu is called, in one of the psukim in Navi, it refers to him as Bar Elohim, the child of Hashem, the son of Hashem. That's the nickname that's given to Moshe Rabbeinu. He's referred to as a concept of son. Rabbeinu Zal says, Ki Moshe, the Gemara says, Yevomes, Ki Moshe ro'o ba'aspaklari ha'meira. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara describes the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and the other prophets. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu saw a clear view of Hashem, V'heim ra'u ba'aspaklaria she'ena me'ira, and they, the other prophets, are termed as looking into a dull mirror, where the image, the reflection, is not as clear as in a perfectly smooth mirror. Rabbeinu Zal says, "Shezehu bechinas hachilik shebein hasogas dorimalo lahasogas dorimato." This is the difference between those that are on a higher level versus those that are on a lower level. Shehim bechinas ben v'talmid, which we are going to refer to now as the difference between son and student. We're going to automatically refer to the higher level as being son, the lower level as student. Ki Moshe hisig bechinas ki lo yirani hodo. Now, Rabbeinu Zal zeroes in here on an incredible item. There's one thing that's written in the Chumash, a comment that Hashem made to Moshe Rabbeinu, which we assume it to be a knock, in a sense. That this was an act of pushing Moshe Rabbeinu away, a way of showing that he's not that great. And Rabbeinu Zal is going to twist that around and show how that's a proof of Moshe Rabbeinu's superiority. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu the following words, Ki loy yirani ha'odom v'chai. A human being cannot see me and live. Meaning, what attitude was Hashem showing to Moshe Rabbeinu? This is a concept of pushing him away. Hashem told him, you can't see me. Hashem was teaching him, what was his mode of teaching Moshe Rabbeinu? You can't see me. This concept of I am a claim, where am I? I can't be seen. The fact alone that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu in such a way showed that Moshe Rabbeinu was part of this upper echelon of the class. That he had to be spoken to in such a way, he had to be told, Ki lo yirani. Moshe Rabbeinu was zeichet to be masig, to achieve the level of understanding that we nickname, Ki lo yirani hodo v'choy. You can see. Verses. Zebchinas ha'asoga shel mo. This is the asoga of mo. Bechinas machonis ma'pishpesh. What do you see? What do you know? This is the manner in which Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. You can't see me. Verses shezehu. Rabbeinu Zal says shezehu ha'asoga shel dori malo. Bechinas ben. This is the understanding of the upper level, which we call the level of son. V'Yeshaya, whereas Yeshaya Hanovi, who was one of the outstanding prophets, the Pasuk says about him that Yeshaya Hanovi said, Shehoya b'madrega k'tana b'Moshe, he was on a much lower level than Moshe Rabbeinu. Omar, he said, Vo'ere es Hashem, and I see Hashem. He said, I see Hashem, meaning, Ze b'chinas ha'asogo shel doraimato. This refers to the lower level understanding, b'chinas talmid, the concept of a student, b'chinas meloi chol aretz kevodoy, where to a student, a rabbi projects an image to a student who's on a lower level, the rabbi projects an image as though I'm very close to you, you can see me. To a student who's very close, the Rebbe distances himself from him. He shows him as if, I don't know you. He shows him a face of, I don't know you. To a student who's far, he shows him, I'm very close to you. Rabbi Nezal says, Ki af al pi she yoda Yeshaya, she yesh hasoga shel b'chinas mo. Note, Yeshaya wasn't boasting, he wasn't being deceitful, he wasn't saying, I see Hashem and that makes me better than Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, to whom it was said, you can see. That's ridiculous, that's silly, because the Gemara tells us that there wasn't a single prophet who was able to draw any power of prophecy from Hashem, unless it came via Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had to be the intermediary between Hashem and all the other prophets. So there's no way in the world that Yeshaya HaNovi could make a statement Vo'eres Hashem, whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, to whom Hashem said Ki lo yirani elomai, Yeshaya HaNovi knew and understood that there exists a concept of not being able to see Hashem, a higher level of understanding. Afal pikein, but still Omar lefi madregosoi shehu hoyo bebechinas according to the level that he was on, which is this lower level in relation to Moshe Rabbeinu, according to that level, which is called Malach Eretz Kavodah, that the Kavod Hashem fills the world, according to that level, he said, Vo'ere es Hashem, and I see Hashem. Nimtza, what do we derive from this? Sheben v'talmid, hei mechinas dori malo v'dori mato, that this child and the student correspond to this concept of the upper level and the lower level. Hainu ha-hasoga shel mo b'chinas machom isma pishpash b'chinas ayim kon kevoidoi, the level of understanding where we say, what do you see? What do you know? The level of ayim kon kevoidoi, where is the honor of Hashem? B'chinas ki lo yirani ha-odom, the concept of Hashem cannot be seen. Ze b'chinas hasogas ben. All of that we're going to nickname as the level of understanding related to a son, to a child. Hasogas dori malo, this upper level, this higher level understanding. The hasogas shel malach haaretz kevodoy, the understanding, the type of concept that Hashem fills the entire world. Bechinas vo'eres Hashem, as Yeshaya HaNavi said, I do see Hashem. Ze bechinas hasogas talmid, that's classified, that's identified as the understanding of the student. Hasogas dorimalo, dorimato, the lower level understanding. Ki haben, because the child, shehu nimshach kuloi mi moyacha, or the child who is drawn completely from the brain of the father, al kein zeichel hasogas oviv mamish, that child possesses the capability of being able to achieve exactly the understanding of his father. Precisely, shehu ha'asogo shel harebi v'achochem shebedarkana, which is the understanding of the Rebbe, and if his father happens to be the Rebbe in Chochem Shebedar, then he'll be zeche to be able to understand this hasoga of the father himself. Avol ha'talmid versus the student, ein mekabel rak b'chinas ha'asogo shel dori mato, he can only receive this lower level understanding, shehu b'chinas malay cholaretz kevoidai, which is this concept whereby the covenant of Hashem fills the whole world, so that in a sense, a father to his child would be pushing him away more. A father who is a Rebbe would be pushing his own child away a little bit more than a student. Because again, this fits in beautifully here. Because the child is this one, Bechinas Ben, Bechinas Dore Mala, to whom we have to present this image of Aye Mekoyim Kevoidoi, versus a student who requires more hiskarvos. This would answer some of the questions that were said about Rebbe Zal, certain things like that, where we see a parent distancing himself from his own children to his students. He seems to show more hiskarvos than to his own children even. Rebbe Zal, this Torah addresses that item, and we see a potential that there could be a possibility of being able to understand that, being able to explain that.